Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And we actually have a pair of good martinis that we'll go through each relatively quickly. But we're seeing some good things at the state level, one in a state run by Republicans and one in a state actually run for the most part by Democrats, but not the Washington-style Democrat. We'll get to that one in a minute. Scott Walker, of course, plenty controversial to some on the left and in the middle. On the right, he's one of the most popular and respected governors in the country. We saw what he did in terms of making organized labor kick into their benefits system and addressing collective bargaining and that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that the state's doing much better financially than when he started in office, and that's because of his tax policies. Specifically, cutting taxes leads to revenues, Jim. This according to Bloomberg. Wisconsin will sell $294.8 million in general obligation refunding bonds this week in a negotiated sale as the state projects a budget surplus of almost $1 billion. Surging tax revenue is driving improved fiscal performance in Wisconsin, which has a population of 5.7 million. The state had originally projected a surplus of $130 million as of mid-2015. So if folks are looking for an improved economy when they head to the polls in Wisconsin this year, you can check that box.
Don't you like it when you underestimate your revenues by a good $900 million? You know, that's a nice sizable bonus. And of course, the Wisconsin State Legislature is taking this and passing a $451 million tax cut. That is the third in a little bit more than a year, which is a nice little thing to do as you're heading into a re-election year. It's going to cut property income taxes for families and businesses and zero out income taxes for manufacturers. With a nice record to run on, like Scott Walker has, and having already survived the recall election, it will not be surprising that he is currently leading a bunch of the polls against a Democrat party. I think it's kind of feeling exhausted out there. No, by the way, he's ahead in terms of fundraising with nearly $5 million in his campaign accounts and the Democrats having about $1.3 million. So still early in the process, but things are looking pretty darn good for Scott Walker, who was once the top target of Democrats nationwide.
Oh, absolutely. I still remember MSNBC setting up shop, not just the night of his recall, but of various state legislator recalls. They were rubbing their hands together with glee. Ultimately, it didn't actually work out for the Democrats so much because some of the people just liked what he did, and other people said it certainly wasn't something that warranted his removal from office, and now he'll get a chance to run on a record that looks increasingly good over the next several months. All right, on to the second half of the good martini, and the West Virginia legislature has approved a ban on abortions after 20 weeks. It now goes to Democratic Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, but even though he's a Democrat, this is probably expected to be signed into law. It passed overwhelmingly in the West Virginia State Legislature. And Jim, as you point out in the campaign spot, this is kind of teeing up a sticky debate amongst Democrats because they see that the American people are pretty much in favor of this. They don't like to see late-term abortions. But of course, the hardcore activists in the abortion movement don't like to see any wiggle room whatsoever. So it could be a very interesting fight here that could ultimately benefit Republicans and conservatives.
Yeah, expect a big fight because I think you're going to see just the rift between a West Virginia Democrat and a National Democrat. It may reach a point where it becomes untenable, and you see the DNC denouncing the state and things like that. As one person on Twitter commented, a West Virginia Democrat is a Republican who likes unions. There's a certain amount of truth to that. The first thing is that it's still on the desk of Tomlin, who is now saying, well, some of his lawyers are saying it's unconstitutional, and that may be kind of the fig leaf he's looking for to say, well, you know, a lot of people will want this, but since he realizes that the wrath of NARAL and Emily's List and every other National Democratic group will be coming down on their heads if he signs this into law. But remember, this is, you know, what Wendy Davis's whole campaign is about in Texas. If you're a pro-life American, you've not seen a lot of movement in terms of a law on your side. In public opinion, actually, the country is getting more and more unsettled and disturbed by late-term abortions, more comfortable with parental notification, not using taxpayer dollars, bans on partial birth abortion. And obviously the viewpoint of NARAL is none of these things are acceptable. We can't have any restrictions on them. Abortion anytime, any place, anywhere, under any circumstances. And you know, that's not where a majority of Americans are. So you're seeing these state legislatures try to enact what seems in their eyes to be a reasonable restriction, which is to ban it after 20 weeks, except in the case of non-viable pregnancies. As you noted, like the vote, they weren't even close, Greg. This is, you know, 83-15 was the vote in the House, and 29-5 in the state Senate. Both of them are controlled by Democrats. Democrats have a huge advantage in the state Senate and a modest advantage, I would say, in the state House. So there are a lot of pro-life Democrats in West Virginia. And so the question will be, do national Democrats kind of avert their eyes? I know they'd rather not have a big, messy fight. But for those of us who remember, back in the 90s, Republicans for Choice was like one woman. I exaggerate slightly. But it was a small group that got quoted on the front page of the New York Times on clockwork, because, you know, the story of, oh, Republicans are tearing each other apart over abortion is this favorite storyline of a lot of folks in the press. And always is these sensible moderates, the Christy Whitmans of the party, up against these crazy knuckle-dragging Torquemadas of the Christian right. And this is not the circumstance, and it was never the circumstance. And what's more, here's the Democrats having this dispute. And my suspicion is that the West Virginia Democrats will feel a bit like Bob Casey in the not-too-distant future. Also worth noting, there is a version of this legislation in the U.S. Senate. And Joe Manchin, the Democrat senator from West Virginia, who's, you know, not comfortable with his party's liberal wing, has indicated he supports this West Virginia law, and he sounds like he could support the U.S. Senate law. We should turn this into a bipartisan effort and then perhaps create even more headaches for Democrats. So, you know, really intriguing dynamics going on the abortion issue right now.
Speaking of headaches for Democrats, let's move on to the bad martini, because corruption is bad, even if there's a small sliver of possibility it could end up working to the benefit of Republicans in this particular case. But if you're anywhere near Washington, or you just happened to notice this story yesterday, a campaign fundraiser by the name of Jeffrey Thompson pleaded guilty on Monday to crafting an illegal shadow campaign that helped get current Washington, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray elected. And the prosecutors made it pretty darn clear they're going after Mayor Gray next, which will be fun during a re-election year. But the Washington Post also pointing out that Mr. Thompson has connections to Hillary Clinton, specifically her 2008 campaign. Try to stay with us here. The businessman, Mr. Thompson, this is from the Washington Post, allegedly provided more than $600,000 to fund secret get-out-the-vote efforts to help Clinton in at least four primary states. Investigators are focusing their questioning on the role of Minion Moore, a senior campaign advisor, and the extent of her role in arranging a street teams operation in Texas, Indiana, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania that was financed by Mr. Thompson and run by marketing executive Troy White. Problem with the contributions was that they were never disclosed to the Federal Election Commission, and thus there's no way of verifying that the contributions followed federal rules. Ultimately, the Clinton campaign didn't use these street teams, but the report goes on to say that there's at least a sliver of evidence to suggest that the Clinton campaign knew about this mounting effort before they decided to scrap it. So, Jim, I don't think this is going to get that far in the taking down of Hillary Clinton, but it shows that there are tentacles to this sort of corruption.
First of all, this is no longer an allegation. This has now been admitted by Thompson in a legal document filed with the U.S. Attorney's Office. So this is not, you know, somebody's claim. You know, he has now admitted this. And the question is now, how high up on the Hillary Clinton campaign did his conversations go? And for all of this talk about, you know, dark money and sinister corporate interests, I mean, look, here's a guy who's a major contractor to the D.C. government. Most of this story and this scandal is resolved around what he did for, you know, what was then a mayoral candidate, Vincent Gray, now currently the mayor and pretty deservedly embattled in his bid for reelection. Look, I mean, if you're going to, you know, complain about the Koch brothers and all that, here is an actual case of a guy spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to help elect somebody, and not in like, oh, I'm forming Americans for a Better America and we're going to run ads. This is an actual, you know, secret get out the vote effort on behalf of a candidate that he at least mentioned in some level to some folks in the Hillary campaign. I'm sure they'll say Hillary didn't know about it, and oh, she bumped her head again, and she can't testify, and God knows what other excuses she'll come up with. But the entire narrative of, oh, these sinister, bad people, you know, the Koch brothers might do something illegal, or they might do something shady. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The candidate of Charlie Wu and all these guys who were, you know, saying the White House is like a subway. You pay the money in order to get access. The exact same thing was happening again in 2008 for the Hillary Clinton campaign. And so I don't doubt that Hillary Clinton will run as a reformer of Washington, the Pope Francis for American politics, as her friends insist upon touting her. But when you have an actual, honest-to-goodness, no-longer-dispute campaign finance scandal on your last presidential campaign, I think that every time she tries to play this card, the Republicans can take this and throw it in her face and say, look, your campaigns and your husband's campaigns have been involved with multiple campaign finance scandals. You are not the person who's going to come and clean this up. So I see a great opportunity here, but I think you're right that, one, this thing is shady, and I think Thompson will get in trouble. It remains to be seen whether anybody on the Hillary Clinton campaign of 08 will get in trouble.
Wow. Amazing. Somehow these campaign fundraising stories keep finding themselves trickling back to the Clintons. It's amazing. Mm. And it goes back quite a ways. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, if you go to the Senate floor to mount a filibuster talking about drones or the need to defund Obamacare, well, that's a stunt. But if you do it overnight and a lot of people take part in it and you're talking about climate change, darn it, it's a call to action and educating the American people. And that's what Senate Democrats did last night. Several of them talking through the night, talking about the need to address human activity that causes increased temperatures, which leads to a rise in CO2. Everybody knows the allegations from that side of the climate change debate. The fun part, of course, is that they couldn't even get legislation passed when they had a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. So not exactly sure what they're trying to do in this situation other than maybe paint Republicans in a bad light.
Last night, we had the really odd sight of Senator Harry Reid calling on the Senate to act. And if only he had been majority leader and he had some sort of ability to bring legislation to the floor, maybe he could hold a vote on it and something could happen. Boy, if only that was the case, Greg. Once that guy's in office, he's going to do something about this. Dana Milbank, who one out of every three columns is brilliant, the other two I can't stand, really just tears into Senate Democrats for saying, look, Harry Reid can bring any climate change bill he wants to the floor anytime he wants. And the problem is they don't have the votes. And it's not just a Republican opposition, even though his comments certainly suggested that was it. Last time they actually had a vote, 13 Democrats voted against it, 45 Democrats voted against it. Hey, you add up the numbers, that turns out to 58. That's a nice, you know, that's well more than a majority. So they don't have the votes. So modest majority of the Senate Democrat caucus doing an all-night talkathon to put pressure on the other 13 Democrats, and I don't think it's necessarily going to work because, you know, they don't really care. But what's more is that clearly this is pretty much done because of a big billionaire out in California, Tom Steyer, who's, you know, already donated $400,000 to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, and he says he's going to spend $100 million on attack ads this year. So basically, for $100 million, you can buy your own all-night talkathon from Senate Democrats. And that's what we saw last night. And this morning on Twitter, there's a really fascinating discussion between Tim Carney, who's the good Carney, not Jay Carney, and Mark Hemingway and a couple other folks saying, is it better to buy votes or better to just buy all-night talkathons, because nothing actually changes from these sorts of all-night talkathons? So maybe it's becoming a more harmless form of blatant influence and senators being for rent.
Terrible return on the investment when you think about
it.
I'll spend $100 million if you guys talk for a night and don't actually pass anything. But
so really, finally, just one last thought, Greg. Doesn't speaking emit carbon dioxide?
Yes.
Exhaling, I wonder what the carbon emissions of last night's talkathon were. If they just kept their mouth shut, they could have reduced the carbon emissions.
I'm sure they bought carbon credits, Jim.
There you go, yes.
On that note, I'm sure you're bleary-eyed from staying up and watching all of that. So we'll let you get some rest and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Carity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.